G'day everybody. Sorry I'm a little late for my live talk. We just had some network issues. I'm on the road at the moment. I'm currently in Howlong and the 4G drops in and out, so we've just managed to get on some live NBN broadband to so we can stream. Thanks for all the questions. There's quite a lot of good questions here, but I'm just about to start a 4-day clinic tomorrow in Howlong. I come to Howlong sometimes once and twice a year and run 4-day clinics. Howlong's on the Murray River, beautiful property on the Murray River. Run 4-day clinics there. So anyone, from Victoria is gonna be hard to get in, but anyone who's in the area of Howlong, Albury, Wodonga, I'll be at Banyandaha naturally for the next 4 days teaching. So yeah. But anyway, I'm just at a house at the moment where I'm going to go out and help with a little Brumby, little suspicious Brumby. He's a very, very much not as suspicious as the little Rescue 20 horse that I videoed a little while ago. So, yeah, that's exciting. I'm going to go and sort of set up a camera and video him. So, yeah, anyway, I'll get into the questions. I've got quite a few here and I've got the laptop down here to... So Betty James, happy birthday, Betty. November 11 is my birthday. Question about an observation. Same Friesian 5-year-old mare, Annie. We have talked about, I had a little stinker escape. Addie second on the pecking order. Dark, I could not see. Had to get to work and she got through the electric fence at the neighbours. Fast forward, my husband goes and collects the Houdini, Addie. This was in the afternoon. He thought nothing of just putting her in with the other two, one of which is Annie, since they have lived together for going on 2 years. Annie went nuts, chasing, kicking, double barreling, biting, squealing. Libby, the matriarch, got between them and tried to keep Addie safe. Question, why would Addie freak out like this? Was it the scent of other horses? Was she trying to make a step up the ladder fear? She got back to normal by evening. I've just never seen such an overreaction to a herd mate. I've seen that overreaction quite a little bit. So what happens in those situations, it's something I talk about a bit before clinics when I'm trying to talk about the dynamics of herds and how there are some philosophies I slightly disagree with in training, and one of them is the philosophy of, you know, if you're pushing horses away to sort of assert a kind of a dominance. So basically, what I say is, have you ever seen a herd that's been put in a yard? So we've got a mare at home, and you know, we put them in a smaller yard, a smaller area after, and she started chasing the horses around really, really in a quite an aggressive way, and you see that quite often when the dynamics of a herd changes or there's been stress and they've been remobbed and things like that. And I think because there's certain levels of anxiety in the horse, what's happening is it's running more on a sensory overload, and then they're trying to sort of, you know, make things right quite quickly. So whether that be, let's get out of here, I need you to get out of here to back to a safe place, and they might start to get a little dominant and trying to control the herd a little, and that's where they get all this behavior happening. And just because also other things that happen, when horses get put in a small space, they don't like that small space, even though, you know, your scenario might have been they're just back in the paddock after all that altercation, but if they get put in an area that's different and they're stressed, well, they're doing a lot of management to try and fix things up. But also, you know, those horses are in their space and sometimes can't get in out of their space because the area is smaller, and that horse that's sort of doing all the sort of dominating and kicking and stuff, they would like those horses a little bit further away for them, but they can't because the fences are in the way. So that sometimes happens when horses are put in small areas and things like that. But in your case, I think it's the dynamics changed and the herd was stressed and she was kind of on a bit of a sensory overload, just trying to put things back together. And whether she thought she had taken control and moved those horses and shift them around, or suddenly those horses were in her space and overloading her sensories. But that commonly happens a lot. I see that happen. When a quite a comfortable herd gets shifted or changed, or dynamics change, the size of the area changes, things like that. That does quite happen. And basically, what will happen is you put them back out, things will get back to normal again, and things will be fine. But you know, I see our horses come in the yards, and they'll be just sometimes on a really good, really good dynamics. But then if I shift a few into one yard over there, and it's kind of different, then all of a sudden one will be pestering another horse, chasing it up and down the fence, and things like that. And what I see is them just trying to, either say get back with the herd, or sort things out to make it right, or too much sensory overload and you're in my space and I need you to sort of out of my space. Yeah, but yeah, it is a common thing, and that's why it's very, you've got to be there if you've ever sort of shift a herd, and you do have to shift them in small spaces and things like that. You have to be there just to make sure that you don't end up with a horse jumping through a fence because of those dynamics. And it's very easy to happen that you'll see, quite a comfortable herd, and then one horse jumps out of the out because it's got so much pressure on it from another horse and can't do anything about it. So the way I say in clinics, when I'm talking to people about pushing a horse away versus directing them, I say, well, if you push your horse away, the reason why pushing away and moving each other around in a herd works is because when a horse pushes on another horse, the other horse can say, that one horse says go away, and the other one says, okay, I'll go somewhere else. And they're quite happy because they can go and play with another horse, or they can go and eat grass, or whatever they do, that going away is available. But when we push a horse away, we're saying go away, come back for some more education, go away again, come back. And that's why I try and encourage people to sort of think about the way they direct their horses, because when I've seen horses and there's been a fence to stop that horse from going away from the other horse, and then that horse is suddenly, pinging horses over fences everywhere, it's because those horses are saying, I can't escape, but that horse is saying, well, I didn't build the fence. The fence has got nothing to do with me, but you're still in my space, and get off, go. So we have to be very careful that our man-made structures and environments, aren't in the way. And that's why I say, it's always good to hang around for a little bit, just make sure things settle down when you shift herds, when there's a big change of dynamics and things like that, just in case you have to sort of step in and, help a horse that's, caught up in a corner or something with things like that. So, yeah, thanks very much. But it's good you sort of noticed it, and, yeah, you sometimes get a surprise when you see the nice herd that you kind of go out and really like. Suddenly the dynamics change and you see a horse, you don't see that horse very often, but yeah, they can look quite angry when they're like that. Beck Jensen. Hi Mark, I have three horses in one paddock, two geldings, one mare. Pecking order is mare, then gelding, one and two. When I go to pat the gelding two, the other gelding gets a bit mean, ears pinned back, looking to bite, so gelding two walks off. I give gelding one heaps of attention and I take him out. Hang on a minute, I just got to get this right. So gelding, when I go to pat gelding two, the other one gets a bit angry. So gelding one gets angry at gelding two. So gelding one's wanting the attention, and gelding two is getting jealous about it. That's what I'm guessing here. So how do I just let them spend time with the other without driving him away? Taking gelding two out also results in a bit of meanness when I turn him back into the paddock. It's only early days as a new herd. I bought my first horse and my husband got two. This is all happened rapidly, so I am newbie with my hands full. Thanks in advance. Okay, so Beck, when I say don't drive horses away, I think people sometimes think that we can't say no. And it's not about, you know, for years of, I'm trying to teach people when they educate their horses not to always motivate them through push away, go away to do certain things. So some people are teaching their horse not just about personal space, but they're also teaching them how to do stuff by pushing them away. And I don't think it's sensible because there's too much pushing away. But if you ever came and watched when I've got some horses at a clinic, for instance, and one of them is very in my space in the sense of not thinking about it. It's got used to just coming in and pushing itself on people in an unobservant way. I will firm up my boundaries, and so sometimes I'll do that by sort of popping a flag and saying, that's enough. Think about me before you walk in. So basically, I would take control as the dominant sort of gelding or mare or whatever you want to do, call it, but person in this situation. And when the dominant one that wants to push the other one away comes over, I would say no. Now, you're not chasing the horse away like an alpha horse, making it stressed. You're just saying, you've come in, step away. I don't want you coming and pushing on me while I'm grooming with this horse here. And that's acceptable because that's how horses would say, if some horses were grooming and one wanted to interfere and then there was a more of a dominant one in there that was grooming with the other horse, well, it's okay for them to say, go away. We don't want you in this now. And I think it's important that whoever you're with, whichever horse it is, they know that that they have to come in and you're going to say, this is my space too, okay? Because remember, when you're with your gelding, the more passive gelding, the one gets pushed away, it's his space, but it's also your space because you're sharing that space with him. So it is okay to say to the dominant one, go away, and get them to step back, because you're sharing each other's time. And the fact that he's smashing into your space and dominating the other horses, I would be saying is that he's actually overriding your space a little bit too. And I don't think in a safe human horse environment we'd want too much of that, because you know, if you've got small kids around or things like that, and then a horse thinks it can just chase off another horse when it's near you, then it can become dangerous. So basically, what I would say is I would change that horse's thought. I would, you know, bang my leg and I'd stand up with my boundary, and even if I had to step a step forward and say no, step back, that type of driving is not going to send a horse sour, because it's just telling you that's my boundary and you've stepped in and I don't want you to come in. You know, the driving that sends horses mad is the stuff is when you send them here, send them there, chase them here, move them there, and you seem like a bully alpha horse that just moves them around all the time just for the fun of it. But if you'll have to clear up a boundary and say firm up, that the horses are completely fine with that, because especially because it sounds like a handled horse that, you know, is happy to come in and get rubbed and stroked and have your attention. So, you know, it's not going to cause a problem. But consistently pushing horses for fun of it is going to really make them frightened. But so yeah, you're allowed to say that's enough, and if it was 2 or 3 meters away, you could step up and say no, that's enough. That's, I'm scratching here with this horse, and I'm actually enjoying this scratch with this horse, and this is my time with this horse, and I think your other horse has got to be accepting of that. Now, as the herd gets on, there will be times that, you know, things will settle in a little bit, but it is okay to stand up for your own space. And if your space is with another horse, well, I would say I wouldn't want horses to think that they could come and push another horse away from me when I'm with that horse. No, definitely not. You know, especially in being a newbie in horses, there's so much information out there. You can get so crowded with should I, shouldn't I, should I do this, should I do that. I think sometimes having some certain clear little things that are simple boundaries that you say, okay, well, when you become a really good horse listener and you become a good leader at the same time, it's okay to listen and lead and try different things. But I think when you're new into horses, it's very it's basically good to have certain clear things that you can say, okay, this is going to be my little thing. When I go out with a feed bucket, it's my feed until I give it away. When I go out and I'm patting a horse and I'm with that horse, this is my space with that horse, and I have a boundary to say don't come in with the other horses, especially if it's a dominant horse. Now, there'll be a time that you'll be out there and the other one will come in softly and you'll all be three of you together softly. But if he comes in hard on that other horse, he's coming into your boundary hard as well, so I will clear that up. And then maybe when he comes in soft or he's interested in coming in softly and sharing, well, maybe there's going to be a time that he can share that attention and you can, you know, but basically if it's a hard thought, a strong intention, just shut it down, say this is my boundary and leave it there. But yeah, there will be a bit of, hey, you're out, and he gets a little assertive when that other horse goes back in the paddock, and that will happen. Over time, it might just start to improve a little when things improve in that herd. Because sometimes the herd dynamics take a little while to sort themselves out. But I just, first of all, just about what you are doing with your horse is important. So next, Jakara, how do you stop a horse from yanking on the bit? How do you stop a horse from yanking on the bit when in a trot? He used to always put his head right to the ground in a trot when being ridden and also when being lunged, and that's where he would keep it the whole time when trotting, which made it hard, as I had no control with his head up to the ground. Finally encouraged him to pick his head up off the ground, which now he doesn't do anymore, but instead he will yank his head down, then picks it back up, then yanks again. I've got to read slow so I can just get the idea of what's happening here. Instead he will yank his head down, then picks it back up, then yanks again. But if he's doing cattle work or even as simple as trotting to the other horses, he trots perfectly with no yanking at all. I'm pretty generous with the amount of loose rein I give him, so he shouldn't be needing any more rein. His yanks can be quite strong. He doesn't seem fond of flat work, which is the only time he does it. I do try to keep it interesting by putting lots of stops, turns, etc., but he still yanks. How can I fix this? So Jakara, with the yanking on the bit, it's a common thing. I see horses that aren't so happy traveling and they kind of block us out and they just put their head down. But as you said, which I think is kind of the bit that everyone should think about here, is the important bit, is when he's going towards his friends, when he's doing cattle work, he has his head in a normal, more upright position. And I was at a clinic just before this one, and we were watching the horses, and I said, see all those horses out in the paddock there, those ones that are standing there half asleep, and those ones that are eating grass, and the other ones standing up, where are their heads when they're standing? And see that horse walking down the paddock there, where's its head? And most of their heads were kind of comfortably up, about that wither height kind of thing. So that's what you're looking at, is the head up at the wither height. Is it down when you ride it? So it obviously comes up when the horse is thinking about something, when it's carrying a thought for itself, and then it's down when it's kind of sucking and just thinking about, oh, they're on top of me. Okay, so what I would think about is teaching your horse how to lift his head with the reins, and also teaching yourself to understand how to give your horse more time to think about what he's doing, which means maybe one thing at a time and let him be responsible in his sort of work when there's not a lot of interesting stuff happening. Just a second, everybody, is that getting a little too windy for you guys to hear? Because sometimes the iPhone speaker picks up the wind. Just give me a message if someone's listening. to so they can just tell me if they can still hear me okay with the wind. No quick typers out there. Anyway, I'll keep going. So first I'll talk about getting his head up a little bit with the reins. So something I try and teach horses and people is when I lift up my hand on the ground, the horse can lift up with me. Thank you. So the horse can lift up. So when I take a feel on the rein, so I'll be standing on the ground and I'm just going to put my hand up and just start lifting up like that. And I just get the horses to lift as high as they can, as high as you can reach nearly. And they can lift and they can just hold and just soften to the pressure. And then what I'll actually keep doing is I'll have a lift and a little backward push, so the horses actually start to move, and they'll loosen their shoulders and move back. And I'll do that so the horse gets used to that when you pick up a rein, it can come up with its head. And then I'll keep that rein up on the ground. This is just in a halter until it loosens and backs off a little and loosens in the base of the neck. So then I would repeat that until you can lift and your horse gets loose and just walks back. Until you get to a stage that you float that rein with the halter, you just lift a float in it, and the horse will kind of lift in the wither first and back a little. The head may still come up, but he'll start to kind of hang his head in a better position. So you kind of lift, the wither will pick up and he'll kind of float a little back, and it won't look like a big stiff movement. And that's what you're trying to do, is teach the horse that when you pick up on a rein, whether it be inside rein or two reins, that the horse lifts and lifts the wither, loosens in the base of the neck, lifts the wither up, okay? So, and you've got to get them used to that, because otherwise you put an upward rein on a horse and they just yank it down. Then on the ground, under saddle, you start to just teach them, I'm lifting the reins. Can the horse lift up with the reins, lift its head up a bit, and not push into the reins? And you might have to do that at a standstill, and basically do it till the horse is really comfortable with lifting with the reins. So then, when you're doing any of your turns, backups or things like that, when you pick up on the reins, the horse goes, oh, that's right, I don't bear down, I lift a little, okay? And that's going to give him the sort of upward feel on the bit, because reins are three-dimensional, not two-dimensional. What I mean is some people ride just doing, you know, that, where I'm sort of riding going, you know, they could be in any angle to help a horse balance and things like that. So then when you're coming into your work, like you're walking into your backup, you're walking into your turns, you're backing into your turns, every time you lift up on that rein, the horse doesn't have a desire to push. So every time you do a transition with the reins, what's going to happen is the horse gently lifts and moves and thinks in that direction. So that would be a habit I'd get into. So then, and then I would do lots of little transitions on your horse. So when it starts to, you know, instead of letting him go long and just have his head down all the time and just have his head down, I would say, well, pick up a rein and turn. He knows that every time he pick up a turn or a backup, he's going to have to pick his head up a bit above his wither just to sort of get up and get in balance. So after a while, in between those transitions, he may not choose to put his head down. Okay, so that's one end of the spectrum. And that takes a bit of teaching. And then the other end of the spectrum will be, is I don't want you micromanaging. So it might be in the past he's been micromanaged, pushed along, and he's just kind of shut down to the idea, and he just puts his head down and goes, And some people really think it's exciting when their horse's head goes down and they think it's a sign of relaxation, but a lot of times it's just a sign of somewhere else to hide, and I'm just going to hide into this. And I came across a horse just recently, Yigara, who's a young horse who tends to get sulky and put his head down. And then, you know, not sulky, but more so, oh, I'm concentrating on the person, I'm just going to put my head down and concentrate. And that's just his little habit. But when he's thinking about other horses, or sort of thinking about something, he picks it up and rides along normal. So when a horse carries a nice forward thought, they pick their head up. When they're kind of sucking back on us with their thoughts, they usually sometimes put their head down a bit. And I call it sulky, but it's, you know, probably the wrong word. But anyway, it's kind of like they're kind of down there hiding a bit. And so most definitely the next thing is you've got to get him to think about what he's doing, which means is you leave him alone and don't turn him and do lots of things. Let him feel like you're not up there, and he gets a bit lost and he starts to go, oh, where is she? Oh, I'll start thinking about stuff. And so basically legs mean go, and allow him to stop before you say go again. Allow him to stop before you say go again. And then at least you've got room to speed up, and he knows he has to be responsible for going instead of you being responsible for keeping him going. And legs without reins, reins without legs. So in the corners, he's got to learn to turn himself and not be, you know, held up in the sense of I'm kicking you and steering you at the same time just to get you around a corner. So I'd pick up a lifted rein, do the turn, loosen. If he decides to stop, I'd say go again. So he knows, oh, I've got to keep going. And then after a while, because you're not micromanaging everything, he'll stop having to think about you all the time, and he'll actually start to think about other things and pick up and maybe start to travel a little bit. And getting him out and about a little bit more when he's out, you know, out trail riding, out looking at things, and just get him in a frame of mind that he normally is thinking about stuff with his head up is going to sort of get him in a better headspace. And then down the track, you might go back into the arena and he might actually go, well, it's not like the riding I remember. This is better riding, and I'm a live horse. So I think that'll be good. Thanks to Cara for that. And thank you for everyone coming on live. I can see some people I know out there, and that's great. I appreciate that. As I've said once before in a live talk, I get so sort of caught up in the questions, I don't say hello to everyone as they pop up, even though I recognise you and smile when I see your names up there. I try to, because I get sidetracked, and it takes me long enough to answer all the questions, let alone have a little yarn with everyone. Right, Anne, my new four-year-old gelding is an absolute mongrel for the farrier. I went and helped a horse yesterday, and the words start to come out like that, you know. And when I finished with the horse, I realised it seemed like that was the case, but the horse was just uneducated and didn't understand. And that's a lot of the cases. And I know I worked with a lady many years ago in Scotland, and it got me thinking, and this is when I used to just say anything around a horse, like I'd be riding along and saying, oh, that horse is a bit like that, and I'd sort of say something positive, but at the same time I could say something negative. And one thing I did notice about this lady is she would never ever say anything negative about a horse while she was near it, and I don't think she even said anything negative about a horse when she was away from it. But it was an interesting thing. But later on, it got me thinking, and then it got me thinking in training, as just to go off track a little bit, is it's like monkey say, monkey do, monkey say, monkey think. And that's why I sort of strongly have stopped people thinking about, don't try and make it hard to make it easy, because when you go out and think hard, what do? You think hard, you ride hard, you treat your horse hard. And it's the same with having anything words and with the words we use around our horses, and I know that this is just a way of saying something, but when you go in with a horse, yesterday you might have thought, oh gee, this horse felt like a mongrel or whatever, but if you think that word, you just have that in your mind when you're doing a lesson. So what I say to everyone, if the horse is stressing you and it makes you think the things like that, then think of it as the horse is uneducated, and I'm here to help it. Because when I used to go in with the last lesson's hard thoughts in my mind, I'd always go in with a bad frame of mind. So to unload those thoughts, sometimes I stopped saying words that had a negative feeling to them. So though he might be acting like a mongrel and seeming like it, the chances are he's uneducated and doesn't understand. And if he's pushy and got that hard eye, and it's really hard not to say, hey, oh, you're just being like that. But then you've got to think constructively and work on how can we fix him. But it's just a little education. I just thought it made me think of a story when I was in Scotland working for this lady, and she always never said anything bad about a horse when she was near it. And it was just interesting, because maybe she just thought they picked up on that, or just was, you know, anyway. But it got me stopping. It stopped me from doing it. So I'm glad I went over there and spent time with her. So yeah, he refuses to pick his feet up. So when you finally get them up, all the half rearing, etc. begins. He's worse with the fronts, but terrible with all feet. Any tips on how to get him to pick up and stand? Okay, so firstly, leading. If he rears, he can't lead, okay? I would start at the leading. I would lead him till he's soft in the lead rope, leading forwards, leading backwards. You can push him across with the lead in the front. Feet will loosen up. You can pull him towards you and they'll loosen up towards you. So the shoulders loosen up, even to a stage that you can just put a little twist in the rope and he'll step his hindquarters over. But leading is very important. Can he lower his head and walk forward? Can he pick his head up and walk forward? All those things, and backwards. So get the leading working, because a lot of young horses are uneducated and then we handle them. So then when they do get a little nervous or they're not comfortable with something, when they fight away from all our pressures, because at the stage, what they're thinking is, this is just a trap. So I would work on education first and getting the leading right. Then I would start to work out as, where is he nervous? So I would do little leading lessons. I'd get him to lead by me, and I would look at his eye hard as he leads by me, and if he's fidgety and shifty and kind of nervous, and I get a hard square eye or a nervous round eye or wrinkles or any signs of sort of stress as he goes by me, then I know. And by asking him to walk beside you and by you, I'm sitting on the concrete, my legs are going dead at the moment, so I don't know if I'm going to be walking when I get up. What's going to happen is, you're going to see when he shifts away, when he's nervous, things like that. And I would work on, firstly, can he walk and move by you and feel okay about being by you at every position, right till his hips by you? Then I would walk him by me and rub him all over, find out if there's any areas where he's sensitive and flinching and nervous and things like that. And then I would sort of work on those areas. I'd just get him walking by, rubbing on him till he loosens and softens a little. And then I'd start to work down his feet, and I would just work till I find sensitivity. So say, for instance, you started at the top of his leg, that's his shoulder, go down, you know, say down to his knee. You might go down here and rub just down from his shoulder, and you might find he gets a bit flinchy and nervous. Well, you just get to the point of where he just starts to think like he's going to be nervous, then you retreat a little, go back down again, retreat a little, and then just work all the way down his leg till you can handle every single foot without picking it up. See, a lot of times we get the handle on the foot, then we try and pick it up. And then after that, I would, once I've handled every spot, I would actually handle it, and then I'd ask him to move a little bit. So I would ask him to move, and while he's walking beside me, so, you know, the lesson I was just talking about getting him to walk beside you, while he's walking beside me, I'd start to handle down those spots while he's moving, so I know when he wants to shift or anything like that, he's been moving and had touched most spots within reason, you know, that I can get to whilst he's moving. So standing and moving, touching those spots, and then once he's at that stage that, but every time you're on one side or the other, you want him thinking across to you softly, so you get his thoughts across and have him thinking, don't have him looking out somewhere else. So first, you know, the one thing you really want to work on is, the other thing I didn't mention was, is his attention with you? Is he looking over there just wanting to get his feet back so he can, hello, I've got a friend here, a very friendly collie dog. So is his thoughts somewhere else and he needs his feet to walk somewhere else? That's always on the cards, and that's, you know, why horses walk away from mounting blocks a lot of the time, is because they're thinking over there and they want to go towards their thoughts and they need their feet to do it. So that's another thing I'd be addressing is that. And then once you know, got him handled all the way down, then I'd go to get him to yield the pressure first in the feet. So once he's handled really good, you know, you could even stand back and have a loop rope around his foot, not a loop so it gets caught on his foot, but just, you know, a rope that folds around his foot that you can let go if you wanted. But and you could do a lesson of put a little feel underneath his feet till he loosens each foot up and teach him to loosen and yield to pressure a little bit before you even think about putting the feet up. So what I do is I go down and I put my hand just at the back of the fetlock and I'll just put a bit of feel on the fetlock and the horse will loosen its foot and I'll reward it for that. And then I'll go around all its feet, teach it to loosen its feet. Once they can loosen their feet and effectively, then they can transfer their weight on the other foot. So then when they're loosening their feet, you can start to pick them up, because the idea when they're young is to get them to pick their feet up and they hold their feet up, not you. If you're holding their feet up, chances are they're balancing on you, and then if you move in the wrong way, then they're going to want to put their foot back down. So it's very important to teach them to rebalance, and sometimes you might work from the hip and get them to push over, balance a little, and handle the foot if they're really stuck. But that's where leading comes into play. The better the leading and the better the horse moves around you, the less likely it is to freeze and brace. So some horses have been taught to stand really well, but they're terrible in their feet, because when they're standing, they're actually slightly frozen and braced. So they got really, you know, really bad to pick up their feet, because they're not loose and soft. So the more you move a horse around, the better beside you, and then take all brace out of the horse and then go to the feet. Yeah, anyway, good question. And sometimes a big problem, but if you work on all those things, I know you will have you should see a difference. So Dawn, actually I'm at Dawn's place at the moment to handle her little Brumby. So Dawn, I'm considering adding a couple of donkeys to our farm where I currently have three horses. Do you have any suggestions to introduce them, like put them in a far paddock? Yeah, donkeys are interesting, and I remember years ago I went up the road to some friend's house on a young horse that I'd started, and sat on the veranda, had a couple of beers with him, and then got to dark, and I realised it's moon tonight, and it was a pitch black night, and I just had to go by the rough feel of she knew where to go, and then all of a sudden I'm riding this young horse, couldn't see a thing, and until my eyes started to get a bit better, I could actually just see tippity tops of trees just, but I was sort of, and then the horse froze, and I'm like, well, what's this, what's going on, because she was on the way home, so technically she should have just kept, you know, plodding along, and she could see better than I could, I know that, but anyway, there was a donkey, and I couldn't figure out why I couldn't move it, but I realised that there was a donkey, and there was donkeys in this paddock, but it was a funny feeling, because I couldn't see anything, but anyway, donkeys are interesting, because they will freak a horse out like anything, so you might have to have it so the donkeys are a little bit locked up and the horses are free, so the donkeys, you don't want, like generally with anything that the horse is frightened of, if it's kind of in one spot and the horse has got a bit of freedom to move away and then come curiously backwards and forwards, I would sort of work on that. I wouldn't put the donkeys in a big area so they're always moving around and the horses are freaking out a little. The horses may choose not to come near the donkeys and you could help them. So if you had the donkeys in a smaller area and that area was an area that the horses suddenly sometimes come up to feed, then that's an area that the horses like, but they've still got room to be at the other end of the paddock, so then you could kind of encourage them to food a little closer to the donkeys each day until they're coming up and they've checked the donkeys out. That's on worst case scenario, in the sense that they're going to be fully freaked out by the donkeys. Some of them after a couple of days, their curiosity will get the better of them and they'll come up. But I wouldn't have the horses in a small area and the donkeys roaming around. I'd probably have the donkeys more in an area that the horses know that the donkeys are guaranteed to stay in that area, and then the horses can come up and slowly get used to them. Chances are it's going to be the horses more scared of the donkeys than the other way around, especially if the donkeys are just turned up in a truck and in a new place. You just put them in an area where you can look after the donkeys, and then the horses slowly get used to it, by whether it be feeding them closer each day, you know, putting their feet a little closer, or even taking the liberty of leading your horses, working on that sort of threshold of when they're, you know, starting to get a bit nervous and interested and stopping and letting them think and then taking them away. And again, you can help them do that, but otherwise they just might figure it out themselves. But yeah, anyway, just something I work on is, and once they're curious and they're interested, then if they're all out in a big paddock, but what you wouldn't want is the donkeys kind of following the horses and the horses don't know what to do. So I'd certainly keep the donkeys fairly confined, not super confined, but that they can't interact with the horses until the horses have actually checked them out a bit. I have an eight-year-old mare, 4 years under saddle, prefers right lead in the canter, more difficult to get her to take up the left lead. She sometimes disunites and finds it hard to maintain or speed up with the left lead when she does manage the left lead. It can feel quite rough to ride compared to the right lead. I ride on a loose rein in a halter. She doesn't have any body or foot issues. What can I do to set her up for success? So it's an interesting question, and it's always once upon a time, you know, and there's a lot of training out there, mechanical training, that set the horse up to push the hip over, get the horse in the right shape so it's going to find that left or right lead, or the lead that you can't get. So I'm going to talk about it as the lead you can't get. So basically, but what I try and do to set up the horse is, first of all, first, doesn't matter which way you actually work on this. There's two things you need: a good steering wheel, a good accelerator. So steering wheel, a good steering wheel is every time you take a left or right rein, you've got to guarantee your horse knows how to put its thoughts into that rein, okay? Now, chances are with your horse, you might be traveling a little on the forehand. You know, if you ride on a loose rein a lot and you sort of, you know, maybe if she has got a little bit, she's got a bit stretched and she might be down in the front a bit, then she's probably got too much weight on her forehand, which means that's got to change. She's got to loosen in the base of the neck, pick up that wither, soften in the top line and engage her hind quarter more. So she's, driving from the hind more opposed to sort of falling on the front. So, but the first thing I address with canter leads, if the horse is very biased and won't go one way, is can it think that way? So basically what I test is I might take the horse to the side that it doesn't do the canter lead. I put a little steer on it, not at the canter, but just at a walk or a trot, and I put a little feel on it. And I loosen the field. Does the horse always ping out with his thoughts to the right, or does it stay thinking to the left? And a lot of cases are horses that disunite and they don't like cantering in one direction or finding a lead that way. A lot of them actually don't think that way. So, you know, you can set the horse up to be going towards its magnet just at the point you want to get that canter lead, and the horse will go, yep, I want to go that way, so I'm going to get that canter lead. So you're more often likely going to get it if the horse is wanting to go that way. So I'm not going to talk about sorenesses, because that's for the professionals who do body work and things like that, and chiropractors and things like that. And there could be a physical reason why your horse is not cantering that way. I'm just going to talk on more the educational and emotional side of it, because that's what I can help you with without, you know, going over your horse saying, geez, your horse has really got, you know, stiff or lame. So basically, I would tend to do a lot of, lessons in pick up a feel, follow the feel, okay? Ground and under saddle. But a lot of the turns I would do is I would pick up an inside rein so the horse actually has to step into the turn and really step into its turn and use its hindquarter. So I would teach it to back up really well. So it's backing up nice and soft, stepping over really nicely, and rock back, step over, rock back, step over. They're things that I'd work on. So when I'm doing corners, instead of big round corners, the horse learns to sort of pick itself up and step over and lift up in the reins more. So a lot of those sort of exercises. Hindquarter yields, so the horse can start to step over in the hindquarter, things like that, get loose and free in the hind. So it's very confident at moving its feet, crossing its feet over in hindquarters. I would start them through the reins, through indirect rein for the hindquarter. Lifted open rein to get the horse to step over. Then I'd start teaching it to yield outside with the reins across like that, so you're getting it really soft with the reins and able to move all of its feet and feel confident about not having any braces and things like that. But I would also work on knowing when your horse is thinking right or left, and that would be when you are turning and you loosen up, does that horse go correctly and keep holding a bit of a turn? So no, I don't mean loosen up as seen, do a straight line, but you pick up a feel, get it to look in that direction, horse follows its look, and when you loosen a little, does the horse actually ping out to the outside? Does it keep wanting to go that way? And you want that going good on both sides. And once that's going good on both sides, then you kind of got a more of a guarantee at the slower speeds that your horse can hold a thought in that direction. If it's just going that way but not thinking that way, chances are it'll always want to canter the other way. And then I would work on getting it to I would work on getting it to accelerate softly. So in the walk, you teach it to accelerate softly. So you sort of say slow down, speed up, slow down, speed up, until, and that's with your heels, like a bit with your heels, until you can, from a slow walk, you can get up into a fast walk, from a slow walk, you can get up to a trot, and the horse is feeling like it can lift and step out. And then the next thing I'd probably do is just teach it to go from a walk to canter, once you know the accelerator. So the idea is the horse can, so if you tune the accelerator really well in the walk, that you know how much pressure that you'd possibly be able to apply to get your horse to canter, or you're not going in blind saying canter with an accelerator that doesn't work. And then I just get the horse to get comfortable at just going from a walk to a canter, just canter now. Instead of letting it string out and then find a canter. And then what'll happen is the horse will go into a slower canter, and then I wouldn't let it canter very far, because if the horse gets on its forehand and starts thinking in the wrong direction, when it gets heavy in the front, that's when that hind might disunite and things like that. So I'd probably just get it to lift into canter and say, thanks for cantering, soften back, and let's work on a bit more walking, and get it soft, steering good at the walk and the trot, and then back to walk, and then step up the canter, and just keep stepping it up till it gets a little more relaxed at stepping up into the canter. And I think that'll, you know, get, you know, you're looking at the horse lifting into canter, but if it does five strides and then falls apart and canters terribly, then don't let it do five strides in the canter, let it do four good ones. So a horse that it might canter 2 or 3 meters after transitioning, especially from a walk, it's okay, and then after that it all falls apart. So yeah, you only go as you stop it before it falls apart, until after a while the horse might canter 20 meters kind of a little bit more collected and slower instead of rushing, and then yeah, eventually you kind of get that your horse, if it's thinking in that direction and it's getting really free and good movements in hindquarters, forequarters, and things like that, then eventually you'll find that horse is more able to not disunite all the time. Thank you for that question. So we're down to, I think we're nearly at the end by the looks of it. Last question, Mary. Hi Mark, I have a question that follows on from all the help you gave me at the Rockaby Clinic about floating. You might recall my gelding trembles when loading in the float and after loading. I'm continuing the loading training, but my question is, should I stop travelling anywhere with him until he's more comfortable to load, or will he build confidence with travelling? I don't know. With your horse, I would get him loading a lot better before you travel him, because I think he's been travelled a few times because of his history, and I don't think the travelling's helped his trembling, because he just gets in a trembly state and can't fix it. So the trembly state is fixed through him having less worry in the cup and learning to loosen and understand and think about the environment he's in, and that's going to be through the loading. If you can get him on and off softly, in and out softly, without trembling, okay? So you, as I was showing you, you get to the point where he starts to look like thinking about bracing or getting close to getting nervous enough to tremble, and you back him off that point and walk him up to it till he's actually loose in the feet and mind and he's thinking, and then you take him a little further and back until eventually every spot you stop him, there's no trembling and no bracing. He's no stretching out where the hind feet back there and the front feet there, and there's no one foot that's kind of got too much weight on it for longer than, you know, half a second. And when he's at that stage and he's soft in the feel, going all the way in and all the way out, that's when you may be able to start, you know, travelling him. I don't think, I mean, if you have to go somewhere for good education and you have to go somewhere to a vet, you obviously may have to travel him, but if you can avoid a bit of travel and work a bit more on getting him good at leading, then that's going to be a helpful thing. And then, yeah, see how you go. I don't recommend everybody do this, but I would do this. I myself is once the horse is going in there and locked in there, I would teach them to lead backwards and forwards, and I would, but I don't want people to put themselves in danger. But is when the horse is in moving a little bit, when they get someone to drive the car and you get them to lead in there, get them to lead while the car's moving. But that's once he stops trembling on the way in and the way out. And even get him to a stage that you can bang the fag on the float while he's loading and he's kind of going in there thinking about it, but confident, okay? Not just obedient, confident. So yeah, thanks Mary, and it was good to meet you too and manage to help a bit with him. So yeah, okay then, thank you everybody. Thanks for the live talk. Sorry about the bit of wind there, but yeah, anyway, I'll see you next time. And yeah, if anyone's in the Howlong area, I'll see you in Howlong. See you later.